All right, welcome in to the Chase and Big Joe show. We'll have Tim Hasselbeck in just a second. Just found out, this is a tough one. Dolly Parton has passed away, according to TMZ and plenty of other outlets as well. Dolly Parton passed away today. That's all the details we got right now, but they're all reporting that 80 years old, legendary singer-songwriter Dolly Parton has passed away at the age of 80. And, oh, man, that's just that terrible. We'll talk more about that later on, but just passing that on with everything. With that, let's bring in our good friend Tim Hasselbeck to the Chase and Big Joe show right there. Tim Hasselbeck, each week sponsored by, segment brought to you by Southeast Financial Credit Union, who on your financial journey with you every step of the way. Tim, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Good to be on with you.
Always with you. Let's talk some football now that we get into. Obviously, you watch Cam Ward on Sunday night. A lot of concern here and there. Some say don't worry about it. Some say do worry about it. I'd like to know where Tim Hasselbeck lands, because we're all going to follow what Tim Hasselbeck says. Your thoughts on Sunday night, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think it feels like it's a continuation of a pattern that feels like, you know, and I think this is what you mentioned a week ago, and I think Chase was touching on it as well, was that you see other people having success, you know, and a lot of success. And in some cases, you know, guys that aren't starters, but maybe one day hope to be. And I think ultimately that's probably the discouraging thing about just where it looks like, you know, not just Cam is, but the offense is heading into year two. I think, you know, without sounding the alarms, because if you start off 3-0, no one's going to be talking about the preseason.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't feel like it's, you know, I don't feel like anybody's riding high going into the season.
And, you know, something else too, the ball security, I know as a quarterback, that's got to drive you crazy, does it not?
It's a huge thing for me. You know, early on in my career, you know, I had a coach kind of talk about how, you know, everyone talks about interceptions for quarterbacks, but truthfully, fumbles are worse than interceptions because of where they happen. You know, there are times, you know, 3rd and 13, you can be like, oh, you know, like it wasn't great to throw that interception, but based on where it happened, you know, net result, if you had punted on 4th down, you know, we traded 15 yards. Not that that's ideal, certainly not, but that's drastically different than a turnover behind your line of scrimmage, whether it's a fumbled snap, a fumbled exchange, carelessness in the pocket. And then, like, as I got older as a player, you know, Kurt Warner was a teammate of mine in Arizona, and Kurt Warner had been an unbelievable player. He had really struggled with ball security and was why he wasn't playing in Arizona. And he switched to wearing gloves. And part of it was, they essentially told him, look, if you can take care of the ball security issues, then we'll play you again. And that was an effort to be better with the ball. He did that and, you know, ultimately led the Cardinals back to a Super Bowl, probably helped lead his career to the Hall of Fame. And it's critical. So I do think, and it's a little bit what I was talking to you guys about last week in terms of Cam's mechanics, I do think that there is a, I don't want to say carelessness, because I think that it's just kind of been an allowed coached thing because of his ability as a thrower. But I think there's been a sloppiness with ball security that, that I would be nervous about. I would just be nervous about how it's gone in terms of one hand off the ball, separating the ball, lowering the ball, and doing all of those things in traffic.
Is there, I was wrecking my brain because Chase asked me if there's a drill for that for quarterbacks, and I can't remember one. Do you have a drill for quarterbacks not to drop the ball?
Oh, well, in terms of not dropping the ball, yeah, there are all kinds of things that you can do in terms of not dropping the ball, in terms of, as you're saying, your throwing motion to shorten it. If you're asking that, yeah, like, you know, and a lot of it is, you know, just kind of slowly creating the muscle memory of not dropping it. So it takes time, but there's no question that people have shortened, elongated throwing motions, right? Like Josh Allen would be the most recent example of an elongated throwing motion for a big kind of long levered guy who has shortened it. But then if you're talking about you know, whether it's patting the football before you throw it, whether it's dropping the football, just, you know, it's like when you take off to run, taking your left hand off the ball and dropping the football. There are all kinds of things you can do. The most simple one is if you're a right-handed thrower, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, you're grabbing the football, like in your brain even, you're grabbing the football with your right hand. If you grab the football with your left hand, you essentially carry the football with your left hand, and you don't grab it with your right hand until you go to throw it. Like, if you just kind of start that routine and practice, that'll help you. Like, if you take off and run, you do things like that, that'll prevent you from separating your hand from the football and turning and run and, you know, having it chopped out from behind or anything like that. So there are all kinds of things that you can do. And I think what happens is, you know, you just look at, you know, Mahomes or other quarterbacks that have been, you know, amazing at creating offense. You know, they kind of have gotten away from some, like, fundamentals of playing the quarterback position and keep the two hands on the football. And that's great, but that you gotta learn to walk before you can run.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck's on the line with us. Tim, kind of staying on the same side of the football there on the offense. You know, throughout the preseason, we've heard, you know, a few good things from guys like Dan Moore Jr. and J.C. Latham, the two, you know, anchors on the mm-hmm. left and right tackle. Because of that, not hearing a lot from the offensive line, is that somewhat of a concern, and could that also contribute to maybe the lack of production from Cam Ward throughout the preseason?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think generally speaking in preseason games, you know, the O and D lines are, you know, there should be no mismatches, right? There's like, and I can't say that, like, I've seen the Titans been like, man, like, Cam's just not been set up to be in a situation to have success. And I think you got to really look at the quarterback position first before you start to blame it on other things. Like, Cleveland would be a great example of that. You know, like kind of look at the quarterback situation there and go, like, was it Deshaun, or is it, you know, the guys in front of him not playing great? And truthfully, like, it's just like, no, just make the throw, you know? And so I don't know that, I'm not saying that it's been perfect and it's never going to be perfect pocket or anything like that, but if you're the number one overall pick and you're playing in preseason games, even if you're playing in preseason games with not the five that you're going to have during the year, but you're also not playing against, you know, the elite of the elite in terms of what you're going to face from a D-line perspective during the season, I would expect the quarterback to be able to play on time, manage the pocket, to essentially be an eraser for anything that's not perfect. Like, that's the quarterback's job. And not to say that, like, there isn't responsibility for the O-line. There most certainly is. But, like, Peyton Manning wasn't sacked a lot, and it wasn't because his O-line was better than everyone else's. It was because he could play on time. He could anticipate. He could move in the pocket. He, you know, could make throws when, you know, there were people around him. Those things are still required of somebody that's going to be an elite quarterback.
Yeah, that was a conversation Joe and I kind of had yesterday reacting to, you know, Cam Ward's performance Sunday, was that we feel like probably his internal clock in his head of being in the pocket, like, uh-oh, here comes the pressure, one Mississippi, two, stick with your first read and not going through all your read progressions.
I think it's important to kind of to get through it all before you escape out and run. One of the biggest things I think that, and I would say this is the case for any level of quarterback, okay? If a quarterback looks, you know, kind of like looks at the primary read, maybe even gets to the second, if the next reaction is escape outside to your throwing hand, that's a horrible sign. If your next reaction after that is escape outside to your throwing hand or escape outside the pocket deep away from your throwing hand, that's almost as bad. What you want to see is a guy getting through his progression and climbing vertically in the pocket. And not every time do you have a chance to climb, like, directly vertical. But if the desire is always to escape outside, you will never be good in the NFL. You won't be. You need to be able to climb vertical in the pocket. There's a couple things that happen. One, it allows your tackles to be able to run people past you, which all tackles need to be able to do. You can't have guys escaping to 10, 11 yards deep in the pocket. It's impossible to protect the elite athletes coming off the edge. The other thing that happens is that it forces the defense, even for non-throwing quarterbacks, to react to a quarterback that is climbing vertically in the pocket. And when you're climbing vertically, you're not shutting off areas of the field that you can throw the football to. So, to me, that's the biggest thing. You see so much of it in the preseason where it's like, 1-2, oh my gosh, I'm going to escape outside. And I think when you see that, and I take the same thing with, you know, approach with my high school quarterbacks. It's like, look, if that's what you're doing, all you are doing is telling me that you don't know and you're not confident enough to climb in the pocket and go through your entire read. Like, and so to me, that 100% can be taught and coached. And if guys aren't doing it, I think it's bad on a lot of levels.
Tim, one more for me before I toss it over to Joe. After Sunday's game, Robert Saleh spoke to the media and was asked about wide receiver Carnell Tate. And he mentions, you know, Titans are not scheming to get Carnell Tate open. So they're just staying very vanilla, which is, you know, very little motion and moving around for Carnell Tate. For a first-round draft pick and their first pick in this past year's draft, to me, why even play him throughout the preseason if you're not trying to scheme him to get open? Because that's just it's hindering the chemistry a little bit, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you say?
Well, no, because I think you're running your base stuff, right? And so I think you're running your base stuff in a lot of the maybe nuanced specialty stuff that you will do that incorporate his skill set during the year is going to be built off of your base stuff. So you, before you want to build your whole offense around a guy, you want to make sure that he understands kind of the nuts and bolts of what you're doing. And then on top of that, you know, he's not the only player that you're evaluating in terms of what he can and can't do. You know, maybe you start to uncover what other guys are able to do and how you would use them. So, that's not unusual to not be scheming for players in the preseason. I think that's typically a good idea.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim Hasselbeck, segment sponsored by Southeast Financial Credit Union, who on your financial journey with you every step of the way. Check out all they can do for you at southeastfinancial.org. Tim, what I hate, what Cam Ward does, it drives me crazy. I hate that he drops out of the pocket, keeps backpedaling. As a lineman, I'm taught to turn those guys outside if they're rushing me. The quarterback steps up. He doesn't do that, and it drives me crazy. Why does he not step up in the pocket?
Well, I think it's probably not being enforced, right? Like when I played with Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia, he would do that. They had to coach it out of him, and they coached it out of him. And you know, I think Trey Thomas was his left tackle at the time, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, we can be friends again. So I mean, you're exactly right about that. Now, listen, it's not like there haven't been some guys that have had success with it. Drew Brees, in many respects, like he would retreat at times. Now, he also would climb, and so I think it made him unpredictable in terms of where you could find him in the pocket. That's where I think that it gets a little bit dangerous, you know, in terms of if it just feels like there is a predictable or habitual retreat in the pocket, and so now you're extremely deep. You're going to get hit a lot. You're going to get sacked a lot. You're going to have a lot of negative plays. And quite frankly, you're going to have ball security issues with those things happening in the pocket.
Do you think he goes out and because he has no protection, basically, he looks at the one read and says, all right, that guy's covered. I'm out. I'm going to do my own thing now? Because I saw a lot of that towards the last part of last year, and I kind of understand that. But how do you coach that out of him? Is you've got to have a protective offensive line? Is it a work in progress? All these questions, like, we shouldn't have right now.
Yeah, I feel like in preseason games, you should be like, hey, man, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get through the entire thing. I want you to get through the entire progression before we bail. Like let's do that. Like even in practice, let's do that. Because you know, I think giving too much freedom to creating for a guy that's struggling playing in structure, I think you're never going to get better playing in structure. And I think in order to be good consistently over a long period of time, you need to be able to play in structure. I mean, I think it's ultimately that simple. You don't want to take a guy's playmaking ability away. You certainly don't want to do that, okay? But a guy having playmaking ability that can't play in the structure of your offense, I think is going to be a short-lived, a short-lived and a very inconsistent era of quarterback play. And I don't think it's worth that kind of investment.
I agree on that. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more Tim Hasselbeck on the other side, brought to you by Southeast Financial Credit Union. That's right here on 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show. We'll continue our segment with Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Southeast Financial Credit Union, who on your financial journey, Southeast Financial Credit Union is with you every step of the way.
Tim, getting to the college football aspect of all this, local here in Nashville, Vanderbilt announcing Blaise Berlowitz as a starting quarterback. A quarterback you were familiar with last year in high school football, that is, Jared Curtis. What are your thoughts on Clark Lea making the decision to put Berlowitz in the quarterback in charge?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think when something like that happens, it probably has to do with, like truly has to do with what he feels like somebody's readiness is. And I would say the thing with, Jared, in high school, he just was bigger, faster, stronger than everybody, right? I mean, I just, like, ultimately, just like his own team especially, I mean, he'd have been their best right guard if he wanted to be. You know, I think he's just, like, that physically talented. And so it's a different world when you go play SEC football with – you know, incredible athletes littered all over the field every time you play. And so, you know, I say all that to say that, like, you know, there is a,
learning curve
skill to in order to play the position, there's things that you need to be able to do at a high level in order to give your team a chance to win. So, and then on the other side of it, you know, not to make it all about Curtis, because I think that, I think Blaise is a good player. And he's a talented kid, and he has time on task in their offense, and I would assume has better command of it than Jared Curtis does. So, I don't know that it's ever an easy decision when a head coach, you know, has to essentially name somebody a starter when all of the expectations were that somebody else was going to be the starter outside. But typically when a coach makes that decision internally, guys probably feel like, yeah, this was clearly the right thing to do.
Yeah, I was mentioning this to Joe earlier. You know, Clark Lea didn't win SEC Coach of the Year for no reason. Like, I feel like every single decision he makes is calculated, like chess. Like, each move he's making is a calculated move. And I think for Blaise Berlowitz's case, he's been with Tim Beck when he was at New Mexico State, and now that they've all transitioned over to this Vanderbilt offense, I think he understands the job at hand, the continuity with the offense. And to your point about Jared Curtis, I think with the way Curtis came from, you know, Nashville Christian, obviously the closest game they played was against Innsworth, and obviously you were the head coach there, so that game goes to overtime. I do agree to the point that you mentioned that he was just bigger, faster, stronger than the, you know, team he was going up against. So,
against us, I mean, I think he had two quarterback sneaks from the 3-yard line, right? Like, that just, you know, like, that's, he is bigger, faster, stronger, right? I mean, it just is. If I think back to that game a year ago, like, we couldn't tackle him, right? Like, you know, the passing was fine, but it was the running that was a huge issue at the high school level. You know, however tall he is, 6'3", 6'4", 215, 220 pounds. And then, you know, the thing that I thought was incredibly impressive about him is that his, you know, like, his shake, his elusiveness for a guy that was, you know, really a kid that was that size, right? Like, that to me was what was so rare about him. Like, we would have a free runner with a talented kid, you know, pursuing him. And, you know, it wasn't like he had to break a tackle. Like, he wouldn't have been down in one-hand touch, right? So that's where I think it ends up being different when you have, like, elite pass rushers at the college level, linebackers that are longer and faster, you know, safeties that can close and play differently. That just physically changes the game.
Yeah, and also, too, Tim, like, even if he were to go, if he would have been, you know, going to Georgia, he's probably backing up Gunnar Stockton and getting paid the same amount of money. And for Vanderbilt, this is uncharted waters. This is something they've never been in a position to bring in a big starred quarterback and pay him that much money. So, once again, another pat on the back to Clark Lee for making the right decision on paper.
Yeah, and quite frankly, like, some of the quarterbacks don't always realize it, but sometimes the best thing is to not play. You know, some guys just, like, they need it. There's benefit from it. Expectations for Vandy football are extremely high. Diego Pavia was incredibly productive and efficient. If they're not able to do that, you know, they're you know, there'll be a letdown, even though, you know, the history of the program, whatever, like, there'll be a letdown, like, it's not exactly the same as it was last year. And so, you know, I think ultimately, you know, not having those battle scars isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world.
It is. Tim, you said something that really struck a chord with me earlier. You said that your phone – hey, Tim.
Are you guys hearing this noise I'm hearing?
Yeah. We are. I think your phone's getting hacked. Hey, we're going to call you right back.
How is that my phone? That's
not.
Like a chainsaw. What are we talking
about? We're gonna call you right back in 1 second, all right? Don't go anywhere. I got a question for you. So we're going to – Parker's going to re-effort getting Tim Hasselbeck on the phone with us.
I think Tim was attending the Timber Games. Is that what that's called?
It sounded like that.
You get
with
the big chainsaw.
I got a few more questions for him that I think that – he hit some really – I love talking to him. He's got some really good points, which we get into. And, again, the other news today is Dolly Parton has passed away at 80 years old. All the TV stations are running with the news. It's terrible. What a sweet woman. So Dolly Parton passed away at 80 years old.
God bless her.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that later on in the show today as well, too. So until we get Tim back on, a few more questions with that.
Walt Wells, the coach of the Chase McJoe Show. Tim Hasselbeck, the quarterback coach and also head coach of Innsworth Tigers.
We got it. Parker, we good? All right, Tim, you there, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Joe, that definitely was you. I mean, real.
We thought you were the Timber game.
That's right. We're good now. You said something when talking about Jared Curtis. You said the team knows. And I think that's so underrated because we all of us that played football, when a coach makes a decision, the team knows, right? Whether or not that's the guy, that's not the guy, but the team knows. Like, your team knows everything about that football team. When you make a decision, a player, if a guy needs to be played, not being played, the team knows, right?
100%. You know, it's one of the reasons, like a lot of times we will watch film as a team, right? Because – you know, if you watch film as a team and guys are hearing corrections, you know, from film in front of everybody else, like, you know, there's a standard of expectation in terms of how guys, you know, should perform. And, it's what the expectation of that is. And so when you coach it in front of everybody, it's like, oh, okay. Like, man, he gets corrected a lot for making mental mistakes or, like, I've heard that coaching point on that protection before. I'm not sure why he did that. Or I've talked, you know, I've heard that coaching point on, where you align versus, you know, that formation, all of those different things. Right. And so, you know, when somebody it's like, well, why is Joey playing over Tommy? It's like, well, I mean, Tommy gets praised a lot in practice for doing the right thing. And we're watching the film and Joey, man, like they seem like they always have to do, you know, correct something on him. So like, to me, it's one of those things where it's like, you don't have people coming into the office being like, hey, why am I not playing? It's like, it's kind of obvious, right? It's
yes. Just,
now you might have fans that are like, wait a second, why is he not playing? It's like, well, I mean, like, it's because you're not there hearing all the, you know, about the mistakes the guy's making.
Exactly. Let's go to Knoxville. They're starting Faison Branding, a true freshman at quarterback. And look, you play the position at a high level. I mean, there's a lot of pressure. And so for Josh Heupel to trust his offense to a true freshman means that guy is pretty special, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, he was, I think in terms of physical ability, it's rare to see high school quarterbacks come out. I mean, no different than Jared Curtis, like to see high school quarterbacks that have the ability that he has. And, you know, so that's going to be attractive. And then, you know, just kind of speak candidly, you know, if you look at if you look at how it typically goes in the SEC, you know, there are guys that have proved that they can play at the FBS level that are the starters. This is a rare scenario. And I think, you know, it kind of makes me think two things. One, I don't believe that Tennessee has kind of stocked the quarterback room probably how they should have, if I'm just being candid, in terms of investing in the position. And, you know, because of that, they better be right about Faison. They better be right, because you could easily go to the FBS level, not necessarily make it a huge part of your salary cap and or your, you know, salary allotment, and go find a high level starter to bring to Tennessee. Like that would easily be done. Like you can outbid a lot of schools. So the fact that they're going in with the stable of quarterbacks that they have,
right,
either means that Heupel's a genius and he got it right, or they understocked the position.
It'd be interesting to watch. All right, one more, and this happened Friday night, and I cannot wait. And Dr. Crane and I talked about this. I had a healthy debate on X all weekend about this call. Shotgun from the one-yard line, Tim. You know how I feel about this, and one of your another high school team lost a game, shotgun at the half-yard line. I don't understand it, Tim. Am I old school? Do I need to get out of the way, I think? Because I don't like it when the ball is snapped and the quarterback hands off to running back at the five-yard line. He's got no head of steam. He's met at the two and got nowhere to go. Am I wrong? Am I dying on the wrong hill here?
Wait a minute. So the score, did it work?
It did not work. It never works.
Oh, so then it did. So it wasn't a good idea.
I'm going to hang up on you.
It wasn't a good idea.
It's not a good idea. Tell me why it's a good idea. I don't understand this.
John Fox, I've talked to you guys about John Fox a few times. You know, he's one of the few people on the planet that have taken two NFL franchises to the Super Bowl, right? Did it
right.
with the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos. An insanely successful defensive coach in the NFL for a long time. You know, I don't know that people necessarily view him that way, but like he's really, really good. And just one time I was sitting with him at ESPN, we worked together for a few years, and he essentially said what you're saying to me, which was, he's like, I will never understand it. He's like, look, I'm a defensive guy, but I would never understand it. And Jeff Saturday was there with us, you know, a longtime center for
yeah.
Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. And John Fox was like, I'll never understand it. Like, you're trying to get, in some cases, not even a yard, a half a yard, a foot, whatever. And you, exactly like you said, you bring it back 5 yards in order to move it forward.
Right.
And he's like, I'll never understand it. And the funniest thing is Jeff Saturday is laughing. He's like, you're telling me. He's like, I could get you a yard before the play ever even happened. he just kind of slowly move that thing forward without the officials really knowing it. Like, and so, yeah, I mean, be unlikely. Hey, listen, I appreciate you calling me after our big win Friday night, Joe. So, but one of the things I could tell you, it could happen, but it probably will not be our first choice to be in shotgun if we get that scenario.
Okay. Well, now it's a better explanation. I feel better. And the thing was, there was this all-day debate on social media, a healthy football, no name calling, just why and why not. And it was really refreshing because it was like all day long about this play that was called. And so I just wanted to get – I waited to really do anything till we got your opinion on this.
I think, honestly, I'm just happy to hear that there was – an X, Twitter, whatever, healthy debate.
Yes.
That was just healthy. There was no name calling.
None.
There was no insulting. It was just fruitful information probably from everybody participating.
It was good. Hey, man, we always appreciate you. Best of luck. By the way, I had Jeff Brothers on. You guys played Nashville Christian Friday night.
Yeah.
He was listening when you said that you have a new quarterback behind center. And our show is all-encompassing. Just letting you know that Jeff Brothers knows.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have their game film from last week, too, so everybody knows what we got going on. So,
no secrets.
No more secrets, especially with the way these kids are posting on social media now. They might as well just put our playbook out there.
Do that. All right, Coach, we hope to talk to you Friday night. Thank you, as always, Tim.
All right, see you, fellas.
All right, it's Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Southeast Financial Credit. And, hey, you remember your first car, your first auto loan? Those first set of keys means freedom, but it can also be a young adult's first experience with borrowing and building credit. Southeast Financial Credit Union can help families with auto financing while encouraging responsible borrowing from the start. It's pretty simple. Visit southeastfinancial.org for more information. Southeastfinancial.org. Southeast Financial Credit Union, on your financial journey with you every step of the way. We come back, it's all about Dolly Parton.
Yep.
Dolly Parton has passed away at the age of 80 years old. We want to hear from you. 615-737-1025. All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe's show. Just terrible news that we got at the top of the hour. Dolly Parton has passed away at 80 years old. I will say this. I think her greatest legacy for Dolly Parton, and there's a lot of things we can talk about, her imagination library. We got, and look, I don't care if you're a multimillionaire or you got no money like me. It doesn't. Those books came every month, and I read those books to my kids nonstop. The Dolly Parton Imagination Library is one of the greatest things that's ever happened as far as literacy goes, and I would spend every night, every single night, reading to my kids from those books. And that, you know, and she put her heart and soul into that. I've never met Dolly. I just know people that know her, and that was very passionate of her to do that, because, you know, she grew up dirt poor in Sevierville. I think her father was illiterate. I mean, she spoke about this, how he was just a good man, didn't know how to read and all that. So her mission was like, kids are gonna learn how to read. And so I carried that to my kids, and my daughter reads to my granddaughter. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And Dolly Parton was a huge part of all that.
270 million free books that were open to the entire world.
It's crazy.
It was a part of her philanthropy work that she just wanted to help give back to not only the local community, but worldwide. I mean, you could go in the Dolly Parton Foundation. You could go even further and further. I mean, you could say the scholarship funds that she goes to local communities around, it was like $15,000 to local high schools in the Sevierville County area. So, like, she's done a lot for her local community, but also worldwide.
We'll take your thoughts on Dolly. 615-737-1025. Call or text. I mean, we love talking sports and life and fun, but I mean, this was, and I always said that on our Mount Rushmore, it's a great June topic on our four faces up there. It's all women, in my opinion, in the state of Tennessee. You can argue all day, but you're wrong. It's Dolly, it's Wilma Rudolph, it's Pat Summitt, and it's Tina Turner. I think those four women belong on our Mount Rushmore. Who's the guy from Davy Crockett or Daniel Boone? What's the guy? Daniel Boone, right?
Yeah.
You've never heard of Daniel Boone?
I've heard of Daniel Boone. I'm trying to figure out what's the connotation here.
Well, I mean, he was like the legendary frontiersman that
people.
He's like number five. But I think, like, Oprah wasn't born here, so you're not – Oprah's not – she's born in Mississippi.
Elvis is born in Mississippi.
That's right, man. Down Tupelo, Mississippi. So, it was a sports show. I mean, but it's Dolly Parton has passed away.
Yep.
615-737-1025.
I remember when I was in high school, we always did this, like, Great Smoky Mountains tournament in Gatlinburg for soccer. It was our preseason tournament.
Right.
And this, I think, was around when the – fires were going on in
Pigeon Forge. Yeah.
And Dolly Parton was in the center of the news because she donated, you know, of her own money from, I think, the Dollywood Foundation, is that correct? Of her own money to help out with the wildfires in the Great Smoky Mountains.
That was 2016 or 17.
So my junior year of high school.
Yeah. Josh says, I totally agree, Joe. The Imagination Library is an incredible thing for so many kids, unmatched in many ways, but this was one that will never be topped. I agree. I mean, it's just, well done with her and everything. And 4828 says, I was never really a Christmas person until my wife showed me the movie Coat of Many Colors. And there's another one, but I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. Those movies will make the hardest men in the world feel something. It's become a tradition of mine and my wife, so we watch it the week before Christmas. Yes, that's right. The Coat of Many Colors is about the Dolly Parton story of growing up, and it is something else. So thank you, 4828, with that.
I think the other one was A Smoky Mountain Christmas.
That is that
about,
it?
I think, yeah, that was about Dolly Parton's upbringing during the Christmas time, if I'm not mistaken.
Chad says, as someone from East Tennessee, Dolly was a beacon of hope. Not many people were telling small-town poor kids like me that they could make it and were worth something, but she did. Inspired me and many others to be our best versions of ourselves. Now my two daughters have countless books thanks to her, and that same message we will carry to them. The world is a worse place without her in it, undoubtedly. Yeah, Chad, I'm with you, man. with all that. Keep them coming in. 615-737-1025. Robert in Nashville. Dolly passing is a gut punch. Hate she didn't get to see her Nashville hotel open. Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, it was, a gas station stop, right?
No. She has a hotel on 3rd Avenue.
Oh, I didn't know
Dolly
this.
Parton story. There was the one up by Vanderbilt, and there's one on 3rd Avenue downtown.
I didn't know. Oh, yeah.
Storyteller, Dolly Parton storyteller?
Yeah, there's a big, not a mural, but it's like a statue, but it's of her head, right?
That's at the Dolly. That's the one on West End.
Oh, okay.
So the new one that opened, or supposed to open on 3rd Avenue, it's right next to, it's right up from 3rd Avenue. It's up but from Old Red's on the left, and then you walk up, it's on the right, Dolly's new hotel.
Okay. I didn't know about any of this.
It's on the corner of Commerce and maybe 3rd.
The Song Teller Hotel.
That's it,
there
buddy.
There you go. Yeah, it's on Commerce Street. Yeah.
Song Teller Hotel right there. 8680 says, I know one thing. Heaven was happy to welcome her home. Jake. Amen, brother. 8680. Good point with all that. Well, we got a lot that rolling in here. 615-737-1025. My grandparents had a house on Old Hickory Lake, two doors down from her. My grandfather mowed her grass a few times. She used to come out in a bikini and say hello to him and thank him. My grandmother didn't think much of that. My nephew's special needs just thought the absolute world of her. Thank you, Scott in Shelbyville.
Got a caller on the call line here. His name is Trent. Trent, what do you got for us? Trent, what you got for us, man?
Trent.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have actually never dealt with Dolly personally, but I have with the family. And just the impact that she and them have made in the Tennessee community. Her sister, actually, so I work for a medical company, and a lot of people that cannot afford medical equipment or they're denied by insurance, they step up and foot the bill, and they are just incredible people to work with, and man, she is so special. And something I will say is, in a Angels in the Outfield type way, put the balls down for a natty, Dolly in the end zone, let's go, our Angels looking over us.
That's good. Thanks, Trent. Thanks for the phone call right there. Yeah, I mean, she's a in and out Tennessee girl, man.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
She's from that area, East Tennessee, Sevier County.
That's right. So, I don't know. I just, you know, you expect things like this are going to happen eventually, but it's just like they're so iconic and so larger than life that you don't think. And look, there's celebrities pass away all the time, but I mean, the tangible of her and the books and the good deeds she did, I mean, outweighs so much. That's why she's so beloved.
Like you said, it's a person that's just larger than life. It almost makes them feel like they're immortal because they left behind such a great legacy.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's like, and I know, you know, we shouldn't worship celebrity. I get all that, you know, but there's sometimes they feel like part of your family. Like when Jimmy Buffett passed, I was devastated.
Yeah.
I met Jimmy Buffett one time. Not like we were buddies. He didn't know my name. I interviewed him one time years ago. But the music just, I was like, all right, I get it. And with a lot of people with Dolly, the same way, it's like, I get that. I get who she is.
Like to what you started off the segment with, she came from humble beginnings. And I think when you have an artist like that that transcends not only music, but you get into the philanthropy work, it brings you back to those humble beginnings and makes you more relatable and approachable to your audience and your fans
sure.
and listenership.
Yeah.
That's why Vince Gill is just such a great human being in the local Nashville area. You know what I mean?
Yeah, heart of gold, man.
He was kind to us when we saw him over at Scoreboard. He's like, yeah, I'll take a picture of you.
He
yeah,
was
sure.
great.
I'm like,
yeah. Just sitting in the crowd, hanging out.
Yeah, just
people
one
walking
of us.
Up. We were remarking that about Vince. Like, there's a member of the Eagles just sitting at that chair, ordering food, hanging out. You would not know, talking to people. It was
in street clothes.
Street clothes.
Of all things. Didn't dress up nice yeah. and dandy. Street
and I
clothes.
Remember I asked him, I said, did the limo get you out here? He's like, no, I got an old Lexus. And I just drove it out here and I was worried about traffic on Brawley Parkway and made it out in no time. I was like, yeah, that's the man right there.
But see, that's the era, and I'll grab Dolly into this conversation. That's what makes them so great is that they're just another average Joe.
Yeah, that's it.
That they don't look at that they're higher than anybody else. They're not on the high and mighty pedestal. They're just what the average man.
One of my
woman.
Favorite movies with her is The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas with Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. It's partially a true story. John McClane talked about it a few weeks ago about the TV reporter in Houston that busted this whorehouse in Texas. It's a Broadway play and everything else. And It's a good movie. Burt Reynolds in it. She's in it. It's a fun movie, and I don't know. It's one of those mid-'80s movies that's happening. All right, we need to take a break.
Yes.
We'll continue. You can weigh in your thoughts on Dolly, 615-737-1025. Some of the TV stations in town are going wall-to-wall in this, as they should. I mean, it's Dolly Parton, right? So Dolly Parton's passed away at 80 years old. Give us what you think about Dolly, 615-737-1025. Chase and Big Joe Show brought to you by the Omni National Hotel. Right on 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show. Of course, the big news of the day, Dolly Parton has passed away at 80 years old. We're taking your reaction here, 615-737-1025. On the phone and text line, let's go to the phone line. Jeremiah's got some thoughts on Dolly Parton. Jeremiah, good afternoon to you, buddy.
Good afternoon, man. That just blows me away. Ever since I was 7 years old, man, I've listened to and watched her. I've got several DVDs of her and Porter Wagoner together on Hee Haw. I've got a couple of her movies and all the interviews she done that I could catch on radio or television. I almost memorized. And two of her songs in particular I thought were worth mentioning when I heard her explain what her coat of many colors. That was about a coat that her mother made for her when she was a kid out of it was a patch quilt coat because, man, they couldn't afford any clothes, and her mama made that winter coat for her. And then the song Jolene, which was a super cool story. There was a woman at their bank that her and her husband banked at, that her husband was friends with this bank teller, and he would go in there on a regular basis to just visit with the woman. And for a long time, Dolly thought her husband was cheating on her with this bank teller. And Dolly went in there and confronted the woman and found out she just misunderstood the situation. They were just friends. And so she wrote that song, Jolene, about that situation. I thought, man, that's just super cool. You know what I mean? She was able to take something that had her heart broke and turn it into a killer song. But, man, Dolly Parton, man, she was an angel and a queen of country, man. There'll never be another one like her, man.
Amen, Jeremiah. Thanks, buddy, for calling in, man.
You're welcome, man.
We appreciate it. Yeah, Dolly Parton passed at 80 years old. A lot of reaction on our text line. Please keep coming in and texting in and calling in, 615-737-1025. These are days, you know, that I'm not sure we would put our sports show aside for a 99.999999, and this is the one we would put our sports show aside for Dolly Parton.
Absolutely. I mean, here in the great state of Tennessee, the volunteer state, and like we alluded to with her work outside of country music, being that volunteer to not only the local community but to everybody around the world, it hits home.
You're a lot younger now. Any celebrity death hit you hard?
Ooh, man. I mean, the Kobe Bryant one as of late, that was what, 2018, right?
2020.
That kind of hit home a little bit.
2020, I think it was.
During COVID.
January of 2020.
That one hit home. Trying to think of some other ones. The Michael Jackson death, that one kind of hit home a little
bit. You're a young kid then.
I know, but I remember I celebrated my birthday the week before, and then I turned on TV the following week because his birthday was, August 28th is when he passed, something like that?
June 25th,
excuse me.
Chase's birthday.
His birthday was August 28th, I think, or something like that. And they had a remembrance for it. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Buffett hurt me. It was tough. And then this is a weird one, but Harold Ramis, who wrote Caddyshack and Ghostbusters and Stripes and all that. I mean, this movies we grew up in the 80s, like, man, those movies were – we recite those lines all the time. We quote those lines all the time, and it was like – that one kind of hurt. This one's tough. I mean, for a lot of people because of who she was.
I think one, I guess more of a local celebrity, but kind of to the wrestling aspect of it all, Lynn Rossi. I don't know if you're familiar with that name. Yeah. He had a vitamin shop out in like Franklin, Nolensville area.
Right.
I remember going to his house and I didn't know he had like cancer. I looked in the obituary the following like 2-3 weeks afterwards. I guess that was his last interview because I interviewed him for like my podcast at the time. And I just remember listening to him, like, golly, that hit close to home. He's such a genuine human being.
Right. Our good buddy Dan Phillips weighed in, said, now was the time to rename the airport the Dolly Parton Airport. Amen. There's not another person that comes close. The Dolly Parton International Airport.
Is there any alliteration that you could find with Dolly in that? No.
Dolly Parton, I don't know.
The Parton.
No.
Right. Not a good day to do that. You're right.
You're like, well, no. The Dolly Parton International Airport.
Yeah.
I mean, who would
disagree with that?
Nobody.
If you disagree with that, you got a problem.
If they don't do it here in Nashville, it's definitely in Knoxville.
Yeah, that's what McGee Tyson, I think, the something airport like there is. Yep. But why not here? Call it the Dolly Parton International Airport. Headed over to the Dolly Parton Airport.
I'm going back to the imagination books. Excuse me.
Imagination Library.
Thank you. Imagination Library. I mean, 270 million books globally. Right. So why not? You're right. International, globally. Why not?
I mean, her servant's heart outweighs anything else. So you could just say, look, because of that library and the book. I'm telling you, rich, old, black, white, it didn't matter. Those books go out every month to everybody. And so we'd read those books constantly to my kids, and it was a big part of their youth and a big part of watching my kids develop, getting to read those books every single night. I know everybody got those books too as well. So
Josh on the text line says, today I feel the same way when Betty White and Queen Elizabeth passed away.
I get it. I mean, an iconic role, and so it's tough. You know, it's funny that they talk about, like, when your pets pass away, it's all love, because sure. Those pets, and like with Dolly, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, there's nothing bad about her. I mean, it's all love with that woman and the love she gave to the world.
You're spot on. I mean, you kind of related into the Miley Cyrus era of it all, how that transcended.
Wasn't that like her godmom?
Yeah.
Or godmother or something?
Yeah, goddaughter. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the fact that, you know, her legacy lives on through her and even, Miley's sister, and then you have Billy Ray as well.
Yeah, they're all a big part of her family. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Come back the third hour of the Chase and Big Joe Show. If you want to weigh in about Dolly Parton, 615-737-1025. Dolly Parton got the news about an hour ago. She's passed away at 80 years old. There was a statement that was sent out by her family on Instagram and Twitter and all the socials that's there. Her nephew as the pretty heartfelt, man. It's tough to watch with all that. So back with more right here. This is the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5 The Game.